Welcome. This is William Evans, and we're Shifting Gears. Our guest today is Maggie Fox, CEO of the Climate Reality Project, wife of Senator Mark Udall, and sister-in-law to Randy Udall. Welcome, Maggie.
Well, good to be here, Will.
You've been the CEO of the Climate Reality Project over the past 4 years. Tell us, how are you approaching our addiction to fossil fuel energies?
Well, when I first joined this organization in 2009, it was to run the national legislative campaign after President Obama was sworn in January of 2009. I joined a couple of months later in coordination with the broadest version of the advocacy community on climate in the United States at that time. And we spent 2 years and more really focused on trying to move policy at the federal level. And as most of everyone listening will know, that wasn't successful. It was a very challenging time. That was when the whole economy was faltering and actually in some places parts tanking. There was also a huge year-long effort to pass health care legislation at a pretty difficult time politically for progressive causes, notably climate. So after that was over, there was a chance for us to really take a look at what it would take to try to drive the change needed to stop this addiction to fossil fuel. And we made a decision that was really great policy and political work going on, but it wasn't actually driving that kind of change we needed that would shift us to a clean energy economy and have us unplug from this addiction we all have to fossil fuel. And we shifted to a focus on culture, understanding that how do you stop people from, or how do you facilitate a shift when there's not even conversation about the addiction in any real way. Conversation about climate change is like many other charged issues, whether it's money or sex or abortion, it just shuts down. And we knew that you actually can't tackle this problem until we get people really talking about it. And that means approaching it from some very different ways, focusing on constituency groups with individuals in them who really can carry on a conversation within a faith community or in rural communities, in agricultural communities, in the national security space, a lot of different areas, women, mothers, et cetera. So, and also by infusing opportunities for conversation through entertainment, script writers, and all sorts of different ways, online and offline. So our approach at this point is really to try to get people to see how personally they are being impacted by climate change rather than looking at it as an issue that's long away, distance-wise and in time, and something that maybe our grandchildren will have to worry about, but instead this addiction is costing us powerfully today.
Maybe hold the phone just a little closer, Maggie.
Okay.
In an addiction, we forget who we are. All of our attention and energy gets funneled into satisfying our addiction.
It's true.
So you've told me the pushers of dirty energy are comparable to the organizations that didn't tell us the truth about asbestos and tobacco.
There's really no question about that. There is a very well-funded, very strategic denier industry in the United States and in three other countries in the world, Australia, the United Kingdom, and Canada, notably. We remember right before Copenhagen in 2009, the East Anglia University attack where they went in and literally hacked thousands and thousands of emails, pulling out individual phrases and sentences, and very damaging to the what actually happened at Copenhagen by casting aspersions and slurs on the character of climate scientists all over the world, but particularly in Europe, where the drive and the passion for solving the climate crisis and getting off the fossil fuel was they were leading the world. So the tactics are significant, the funding is significant, and they know exactly what they're doing, and they've been quite effective at it. So we need to put as we look at this, we actually have to figure out and drive our campaigns to putting a price on denial, because the denier industry has been costing us very heavily.
As long as we remain confused and silent, then we're trapped in this addiction.
Right. Well, I mean, there is another whole other future. I think one of the most frustrating things for those of us who work on this, and Randy being a great example, is we know what a clean energy economy looks like. I have a picture.
Sure.
I know what a clean energy economy looks like. I know what the future looks like. But the vast majority of people in the United States and all around the world are simply have no image of it. So they not only don't understand that this addiction, how much it's costing them today, every day, but they actually don't have a place to move their minds to see an alternative. So we have really two very precise jobs. One is to give people an understanding, help them understand how much we're paying today for this addiction, and what a world on the other side of the addiction looks like.
And you said to me earlier in conversations that the biggest challenge to climate change is communication, and I would add remembering who we are.
Well, that is a communication story, really, because at the end of the day, science is our information source, and it's powerful. And interestingly enough, at the same time, there's been a denier industry emerge, aggressive campaigns at multiple levels in the United States and all around the world around climate change. There's also been a very aggressive anti-science campaign, notably.
Right.
The two have come together. What we have done, those of us who woke up to climate change in our however we have in each person's individual story of their wake up is very important to talk about and to share. We've used numbers and graphs and projections and big figures that are hard to comprehend. We've looked at what's happening in Bangladesh and other parts of the world where literally we're creating millions and millions of climate refugees or island nations that are being swallowed up by the sea. While many people are sympathetic to the plight of people who have very aggressive impacts of climate change in sub-Saharan Africa, it's still very far away. And so our ability to give people a connection to it in a personal way has been somewhat limited. That's not the case anymore. Our addiction is present, and the impacts are significant. Just look at the extreme weather events that we've been experiencing over the last few years and their growing intensity. Superstorm Sandy, the year anniversary of that will be October 29th. And just last week, the heat index hitting 110 degrees means it felt hotter than the highest temperature ever recorded in New Jersey, which was 109, and bested mid-afternoon heat index readings in Death Valley, which topped out at 105.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever expected to have New Jersey and Death Valley temperatures in the same sentence at the same time. Just yesterday, temperatures reached 100 degrees in Newark, and humidity made it feel more like 105, because there is no humidity in Death Valley. So there's just almost endless examples today.
Right.
Extreme weather is changing. Carbondale, what's happening there?
It's hot. What I want to hear you tell us, though, is your central strategy about story.
Really, thank you for asking, because I think it's a critical piece of our journey. Number one, what we work on, what we do with our lives, is based on what we love. And almost always, stories are, in effect, the things that we care about. We tell stories about the things that we care about. And engaging people in story storytelling and understanding the power of storytelling is at the core of everything we do every day. Next week, we are excited to hold a climate leadership core training in Chicago. As of this morning, we have close to 1,600 people coming.
All right.
From 79 countries and all 50 states.
Wow. 79 countries and all 50 states.
79 countries and all 50 states.
Great.
It's amazing. We also just held a training about a month, 6 weeks ago, not quite, in Istanbul. There were close to 500 people there from 77 countries, and that was in the middle. It just so happened our training happened to be, we were having it in the middle of Taksim at the very weekend of all of the social unrest. So it had a particular charge to it.
Well, humans have been learning from stories for many thousands of years. Our ancestors sat around campfires and listened.
Well, that is how we've passed on all of our history until, you know, we started pictographs and pictographs. Storytelling on rock, but it's the oral tradition is central to all of humanity through all of time.
Well, and the science is that we understand and remember best from hearing stories.
Well, the science is actually, interestingly enough, there's a resurgence of science now about storytelling. There is old science.
There sure is.
There's new science.
Yeah.
That is showing us that, you know, the whole rules of public relations firms, which is, you know, you can only remember three things, but that's only true if you're trying to share facts.
Not the kids stories. I'm telling stories to.
Exactly. Stories actually don't have the same rules. We remember almost the entire thing, and the sounds and the images that are created in your mind, as well as the essential narrative of the story and the impact it had on each person listening to it. So stories have a power well beyond information and well beyond even the crafted messages of PR firms, which are very, very carefully put together for us in frames and phrases that are designed to get us to buy products or do many other things.
Well, so, Kendall Haven, the storyteller that I'm getting help from, tells me that every story we hear gets filtered through our own experience and history. And that's part of the reason we understand it and we remember it so well.
It's powerful, and because when someone starts to tell a story, your ability to understand it is to link it into your own history.
Yes.
So you amplify the story with your story.
Right.
And then the story becomes your story. Well, who forgets their own stories? We don't. We remember our stories, and hearing stories that we can connect to, in effect, they become our own. And you start telling your oh, right, yeah. Well, or I've never heard that. Explain that to me, and then processing it in yet another way. So, interestingly enough, even though we've worked on climate change, not just this organization, but the broader community in the United States and around the world, we really haven't been focused specifically on storytelling in a way that this issue, this challenge, deserves. So we shifted very specifically and radically to storytelling. And so, for example, next week in a three-day training, two full days of it will be about storytelling, about the skills, how to tell a story, what stories mean, what the data tells you, how to stand in front of different groups and how to create stories that will resonate with one group a little more than another.
Yes.
How to pick spokespeople. How to begin. That stories have a beginning, a middle, and an end. That there is a hero and a villain. There are elements that make stories even more effective than they are without a little bit of attention to certain details.
Right. And I think we're all innately storytellers. Maggie, adjust the phone just a little bit, because sometimes I get some static.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So let me see. I think maybe I'll put my cell phone on the ground, and maybe that'll help.
Are you talking from a cell phone?
No. We've learned that if they're on the table,
oh, okay,
it can affect a landline. So I just put it on the ground, and I brought the phone a little closer, and I'll try to hold the earpiece closer. Does that help?
Yeah, I think.
Are you still getting static?
No, not as much.
If you're getting any, I could shift to another phone line to see if that helped.
Go ahead and try. Would that take long?
I have another phone in my office.
Okay, try it.
You want to do that? So I would have to hang this one up, and you would have to call me because it's a whole different phone, not a different line on this phone. Or is that worth it?
Well, we've got 10 minutes left. I'd like it to be as high a quality as possible, so
yeah.
It's easy for me.
I just shift physically to another part of the room.
Okay, well, I'll stop this. I'll save it, and then we'll pick it up here. And then...
Now, do you need to call me, or can I call you?
No, I'll call you back.
Okay, well, then... Can you hold 1 minute while I ask Sarah what that number is? Because it's a conference number, and I don't actually know it. Bill's going to run out and ask her.
Sure.
So I can give it to you, and then you can call me on a different line.
Yeah.
What is it, like a low-key static in the background? Is that what it's like?
No, it's around some words. There's just some static.
Oh, how weird.
Yeah. And,
Well... going to look at the number and I'll give it to you.
Yep.
214-6091. Right.
It'll take me a couple of minutes because I'm going to save this file.
Okay.
And then we'll pick it up right where we were.
Okay, I'll just go shift over to that other part of the room and pick that phone up and hope it doesn't do it there.
Okay.
All right, thanks.
Call you back in a couple of minutes.
Okay.